Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Islamic insurgents overrun another province in Afghanistan. Officials and Taliban sources in Afghanistan confirm the Islamist insurgency has overrun another district in the southern Helmand province, which borders Pakistan. Speaking to VOA on condition of anonymity, Afghan security officials alleged that heavily armed Taliban insurgents sheltering on the Pakistani side also took part in the assault. The U.S.-led coalition battling Islamic State fighters in Syria has been concentrating attacks on the city of Manbij near Aleppo, but reports say militants continue to occupy the city center. In the meantime, the UN envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, is urging Russia to let the UN take charge of any humanitarian corridors in and around Aleppo.
How can you expect people to want to walk through a corridor, thousands of them, while there is shelling, bombing, fighting?
Russia has proposed opening up four corridors to be administered by Russian and Syrian forces to allow civilians and some fighters to leave. A tense standoff between riot police and armed supporters of an imprisoned politician continued Saturday in the Armenian capital of Yerevan. Three gunmen who were barricaded inside a police station for about 2 weeks were wounded Friday in an exchange of gunfire with police. Authorities said the gunmen shot first and the wounded inside the station were being treated by three members of an ambulance crew who were being held hostage. 165 people were detained during the unrest. More than 20 opposition supporters were later arrested. The rest were released. This is VOA News. Federal prosecutors in Belgium say police have arrested two men suspected of planning a terrorist attack. Officials say the two brothers were arrested late Friday following house searches in the areas of Mons and Liège. Belgium was already on high alert following the deadly March bombings in Brussels claimed by the Islamic State and a string of deadly attacks in France and Germany. The Democratic Party nominee for U.S. President Hillary Clinton campaigned Friday in the state of Pennsylvania. Jobs creation was the theme of her remarks.
I feel like I have a very good idea about how a president can help create jobs, because over the 8 years my husband was president, we created 23 million new jobs.
Republican Party nominee for president Donald Trump also campaigned Friday, talking about how he has fared against Hillary Clinton in voter surveys.
Really, we beat her by a lot, but honestly, the numbers were incredible, which tells you, isn't it good to have Trump running for the presidency?
The presidential election will be on November the 8th. That's about 100 days from today. Pope Francis is continuing his five-day visit to Poland. The Pope arrived at a park in Krakow today to sounds of liturgical singers. He greeted the crowd gathered to hear him say Mass. On Friday, he walked in silence through the Nazi death camp Auschwitz-Birkenau. More than 1 million people were killed there during World War II. In this week's address, retired federal judge Timothy Lewis joined Vice President Joe Biden to discuss the nomination of Chief Judge Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court of the United States. This is Judge Lewis with the Vice President.
And I'm living proof that President Obama's nominee to the Supreme Court, Chief Judge Merrick Garland, deserves similar consideration by today's Senate.
Not only because Merrick Garland is recognized, I might note without exception, by the right and the left as one of America's sharpest legal minds and a model of integrity,
but also because that's what the Constitution requires. The sitting president shall, not may, but shall nominate someone to fill a vacancy on the Supreme Court with the advice and consent of the Senate.
Judge Lewis emphasized that this lack of action is preventing the Supreme Court from fulfilling its duty of interpreting the law and resolving conflicts in the lower court. For the Republican address this week, the U.S. Senator from Ohio, Rob Portman, chose to focus on the raging heroin epidemic in the United States. For more on all these stories, visit our website at voanews.com. This is Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Talking of validly registered voters amounting to 6,698,372 voters.
The Zambian Electoral Commission plans to certify Sunday the voter register to be used for the upcoming elections.
We are diligently doing all of we could to ensure that our country is free from the hands of any hooligans, any militancy, and other allied criminal activities or gangs that have been disturbing this our country for a very long time.
The Nigerian army launches a major military offensive against the Niger Delta militants.
Slowly it started to creep in that democratic channels do not work, they do not get results. That is why it is violence, it is burning in order for your party to listen to you, because when you said we don't approve of this candidate, nothing happens.
And on Wednesday, political parties in South Africa battle for power in cities and towns across the country. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Electoral Commission of Zambia will officially certify on Sunday the voter list it recently compiled to be used for the August 11 general election and referendum. This after the Electoral Commission concluded the training of poll officers who will be deployed to administer the vote at all polling stations across the country on the election day. Priscilla Isaac, Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia, says civil society, local and international poll observers have been training their monitors in readiness for the upcoming presidential, parliamentary and local elections.
We are talking of validly registered voters amounting to 6,698,372 voters.
So in terms of constituencies or regions, which city dominates with the highest population of registered voters?
Well, I'll give you by region. The highest is Lusaka, followed by the Copper Belt, and thereafter Southern Province.
I understand more women registered than men. How come?
Well, maybe we are more responsible, Peter.
All right, I hear you.
Yes, we have slightly more women registered than men, yes.
I understand the Electoral Commission of Zambia just concluded training officials who will administer the election at the polling stations, and subsequently other non-governmental or civil society groups are also training officials. Do they have to match the requirement or lay down procedure of the Electoral Commission in order not for confusion to arise during election time?
Yes, we do train our staff thoroughly. And what it is they have to sit for a test at the end of the training, and only those who pass the test, who meet the pass mark, will be taken on.
What about the civil society groups? Do they also have to do the same thing, or you have special requirements for them to meet?
Well, not really. Local monitors have their own guidelines, just the way international observers do. And so when they do the training, they make sure that they cover in detail what is expected of their monitors, both in performance and conduct. But I'm not aware of them conducting tests. For us, we opted to go the way of testing to ensure that we don't compromise the quality of the staff that we take on, because in the past we had competency issues. So at least when you test people, it's also a control measure to reduce on favoritism and things like that, where you, because somebody knows somebody, then even if you're not competent, you're still taken on.
I understand the voter register is supposed to be certified on Sunday. What goes into the certification and what is the plan?
No, it's just a simple process. It's just my signature being appended, confirming that the register is is ready for the election. That nothing can be added or subtracted from it beyond this date, and no other register except that one certified by my office can be used.
A lot of international observers have begun arriving to monitor the elections. What can you tell me about that, and what is the cooperation that you are having with them?
We have a number of observer mission groups that have come in. The EU are in. I think theirs is the largest with about 100. I'm told African Union will have about 50. SADC, I just attended the launch of their mission this morning. They're about 50 as well. Commonwealth will have about 50. Then Electoral Commissions Forum for SADC countries are also coming in. I think they have about 20. So, and then we also, from a group from the Great Lakes region. So they're quite, that is like an overview. Qatar Center will also be sending an observer mission, Electoral Institute of Southern Africa as well. And like always, the mission leaders come to meet the commission to get an overview of our preparations and where we are at. And then we also go and give briefings to the larger mission groups. So we are thankful that people accepted the invitation to come and observe our elections, and we are grateful for their support. And we look forward to the reports that they'll submit after the election, because each election is always a learning process.
Priscilla Isaac is the Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Joint military offensives carried out in Lagos and Ogun states by the Nigerian Army, Air Force and Navy have left at least 114 militants dead and many injured. The militants have recently stepped up attacks on oil pipeline installations in the oil-producing Niger Delta state and have threatened to do more harm to the oil sector. Brigadier General Rabi Abubakar, Director of Defense Information, told me the military intelligence suggests that Niger Delta militants have been hiding out in creek beds.
The significance of this combined and very vibrant effort of the Nigerian Armed Forces is to ensure that the militants are flushed out from that general area where they have been causing mayhem to the generality of the inhabitants there. And most significantly, you know, to ensure that their hideouts and their camps are completely taken away from that place. And that's what we did. So we are diligently, you know, doing all that we could to ensure that our country is free, you know, from the hands of any hooligans, any militancy, and other allied criminal activities or gangs that have been disturbing this our country for a very long time. And I believe we have made some remarkable successes in that operation.
How remarkable is it? Were some of the militants caught or some of them killed? Do you have any figures?
Well, when I said remarkable success, at least, if not for anything, we deny them freedom of movement, we deny them freedom of action, and we completely annihilate or destroy their camps and their hideout. So all these efforts are being obtained, you know, as a result of the synergy between the armed forces and other security agencies, you know, coming together to give the operation maximum support for us to dislodge any perceived threats that have been happening in that general area and any other locations in this great country. So it was a remarkable, and I believe it is just a routine, normal routine exercise. What we do is based on the intelligence and information that we have gotten from our source. So I believe we should be commended for what we are doing, and we will keep on doing that to ensure that the militancy and other criminal activities or gangs that are disturbing this great country is no more there to accomplish.
Well, I understand that the creeks in Lagos and Ogun State have recently become a safe haven and operational hideout for militants from the Niger Delta. Did this form a particular interest for the military? And because of the action that you took or the military took, I heard some residents were uncomfortable. What assurances did you give them?
No, you see, it's not a matter of being uncomfortable. This is our country. Mr. Peter, so we have to do everything possible to ensure that we do our roles based on the constitutional provisions. And that's what we're exactly doing. Significantly, that's what we are doing. We are doing it for the interests of this great country. We are doing all these things for the interests of national security and national development. And I believe everybody is happy about it. You understand? Forget about any other acquisitions. The acquisitions are coming from the from within of those who are denied access to free movement to carry out their own heinous crimes. And that's why they are crying.
Well, some military analysts are saying that the military onslaught or the dislodgement of the militant was carried out to drive them back to the Niger Delta, where a full-scale attack has been planned and will be implemented very soon. Is this the case, Lieutenant General Abubakar?
No. You see, everybody can talk. There's freedom of information. Everybody has the right to say his own opinion. But to the best of we know, we cannot allow criminal gangs to take this to dominate any locations or any area in this country. And that's what we are doing as much as possible to ensure that we deny them that access of free movement and not abuse. And I believe all efforts are on deck now to ensure that a successful operation is being conducted and it will be ongoing to ensure that this kind of thing, where they come and kill innocent citizens of this great country, will no longer be tolerated and condoned.
Brigadier General Rabi Abubakar is the Director of Defense Information of the Nigerian Army. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Political parties will battle for power in cities and towns across South Africa on Wednesday at the country's local government or municipal elections held every 5 years. Opinion polls show support for the ruling African National Congress or the ANC slipping in most cities. In the run-up to the polls, there have been violent protests against ANC-dominated city and town councils. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports in the first part of a series on South Africa's forthcoming municipal elections.
Police fire stun grenades at people destroying municipal property in the city of Tshwane. They're angry that the ANC has rejected their preferred candidate for mayor.
It feels very much as though they feel that they're being dictated to.
Gabriella Mackay is governance specialist at the South African Institute of Race Relations.
Slowly it started to creep in that democratic channels do not work, they do not get results. That is why it is violence, it is burning in order for your party to listen to you, because when you said we don't approve of this candidate, nothing happened. So what do we...
Political scientist Jolene Steyn-Kotzer says some in the ANC are rebelling against it because it's forcing election candidates on the people and so threatening the livelihoods of other ambitious and popular party figures.
So of course she will then try to mobilize either a community to go out and protest against this decision, or alternatively, you will then try to take out your political competition to secure your livelihood and your political career within that factional system.
In some areas, candidates have been murdered, allegedly on the orders of rivals. Director of the academic think tank, the Center for the Study of Democracy, Professor Stephen Friedman, agrees it's a particularly violent build-up to the vote. He says ANC members who find it difficult to get jobs in the private sector are battling for town council seats as a route to power and money.
I mean, there does seem to be worse violence within political parties this time, which is really an economic problem. For many people in this country, the difference between being a councillor and losing your seat is the difference between being middle class and poor. And if that is the case, obviously people are prepared to fight very hard to become middle class.
Friedman describes South Africa's local government poll as very significant.
First of all, because there is a very real prospect that the African National Congress, which has dominated politics since 1994, may actually lose overall control of some of the major cities. I think the other important thing about this election is that it will really tell us whether voters who are unhappy with the ANC are really prepared to break with the ANC.
The ANC has been losing support for more than a decade. Friedman says current by-elections and opinion polls are showing the same trend.
On the basis of that information, it seems pretty clear that in the major city areas, the ANC will lose ground. But whether it will lose ground in a dramatic way is another matter.
Friedman expects the ANC to drop from 62% of the national vote into the high 50s, and the main opposition Democratic Alliance, the DA, to gain a few percentage points. The ANC would therefore still control most municipalities in South Africa. But crucially, says Stein Kotzer, it looks as if it'll lose a lot of votes in several big cities.
The DA is starting to make its presence known within traditional ANC strongholds. Whether what they have done thus far is sufficient for them to secure victories in the ANC stronghold remains to be seen.
The DA already controls Cape Town. Mackay predicts the ANC will lose at least one other major municipality after this election, probably Nelson Mandela Bay.
Where you might see change, which is a big thing, is you might see a change of metropolitan municipality, and I think that's going to be damaging to the ANC.
Stein Kotzer says what's hurting the ANC is mass unemployment, and facts like after so many years of democracy, there are still so many people using buckets as toilets.
The issues that face your poorer communities are so great that to a large degree there has been this disillusionment, not just necessarily with the ANC as a political party, but whether or not South Africa is indeed a free and democratic country for them.
Mackay says if the ruling party loses another city, it could herald the end of ANC dominance and spark an era of coalition politics in South Africa. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Arrested Information Secretary of the Zimbabwean National Liberation War Veterans Association, Douglas Muhia, appeared in a Harare court facing charges of allegedly insulting President Robert Mugabe. The organization's Secretary General Victor Matamadanda faces similar charges. At the same time, former Vice President Joyce Mujuru has taken Mr. Mugabe to court over a statutory banning the importation of basic commodities and other goods. For VOA, Thomas Chiripasi has this report.
State Attorney Tapiwa Kasema told the court that Mahia allegedly insulted President Mugabe through a communique that was released by his association last week before remand proceedings could start. Defense lawyer Harrison Nkomo applied for the withdrawal of charges and immediate release of the top freedom fighter, saying he had been brought to court illegally as the state had not obtained a certificate of prosecution from the prosecutor general as required by law in cases of such a nature. Nkomo confirmed that Magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe dismissed the application.
We proceeded with the remand proceedings and we as the defense had raised an objection that it is a requirement of the law that if you are charging someone with crimes against the state, especially the head of state, it's a requirement that the prosecutor general signs a particular certificate before remand proceedings can commence. That was not done. The objection was upheld by the magistrate, used his discretion and said and gave the state until 11:15 on mark of bail. And due to the effect of time, we are proceeding with the bail proceedings tomorrow at 9 o'clock here.
What is the charge?
Meanwhile, the case continues in court tomorrow when the magistrate is expected to deliver his ruling on the bail application that was filed by the defense team. After the court session, some war veterans who attended today's court session in solidarity with Mahia sang revolutionary songs at the court entrance demanding his immediate release. The War Veterans Body issued a hard-hitting statement last week calling on President Mugabe to address economic issues affecting Zimbabweans. The War Veterans Body also called on Mr. Mugabe to choose a successor, adding that they would not campaign for him in the 2018 elections because of his advanced age. In another matter, former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, who leads the newly formed Zimbabwe People First Party, today took Mr. Mugabe to court over his government's introduction of a statutory instrument that bans the importation of basic commodities and other goods. In papers filed in the High Court, Mujuru argues that Statutory Instrument 64 was illegal and should be set aside because its promulgation was unlawful. She says instead of duplicating a law that was used by the Ian Smith administration, the president should have ensured that the law passed through parliament before gazetting it. The Minister of Industry and Commerce is also cited as a respondent, while Marian Chombo, the former wife of Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo, filed a supporting affidavit in Mujuru's application. This is Thomas Chiripasi.
The president of the African Wildlife Foundation has called on African government to urgently address the issue of poaching, which he said is depriving the continent of its resources. But Zimbabwe says the international ban on the sale of ivory, which was imposed to discourage poaching, is hurting its interests. For VOA, Sebastian Mhofu has more from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Winding up a five-day visit to Zimbabwe on Friday, Kadu Sebunya, president of the African Wildlife Foundation, said poaching is depleting Africa of its vital natural resources in the same way the slave trade once did. He said animal populations are dropping rapidly around the continent.
Poaching is dire, and I think we are under crisis in Africa. We've been losing 30,000, average of 30,000 elephants annually. Many African countries in the last 20 years have lost all their rhino population in the country.
According to the International Union for Conservation of Nature and Natural Resources, other animals on the decline in Africa include cheetahs and black rhinos. The animals are important to Africa's economy, helping to drive tourism. But economic concerns also drive the poachers who sell wildlife products such as tusks and rhino horn to meet demand abroad, mainly in Asia. Sebunya said something must be done to reduce demand for these products, especially ivory, as well as address the poverty and hunger that lures some Africans into poaching. Zimbabwe is the second largest elephant population, estimated at about 82,000. The number has dropped by about 6,000 in the last decade, partly due to poaching. Like other African countries, Zimbabwe is taking steps to stop the decline. However, the government has refused to destroy the elephant tusks it has confiscated from poachers over the years, as Kenya recently did. Here is Zimbabwe's Finance Minister, Patrick Chinamasa, talking in Parliament this week about that ivory.
We have 9.6 billion worth of ivory in the country, sufficient to write off our debt. So this is the paradox of Africa. Rich Africa, poor Africans. Because the policies are coming from outside and imposed on us. They don't have elephants, but they become members of CITES to ban and stop us from disposing our own assets.
CITES is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, an international agreement that, among other things, bans the sale of ivory. The ban was imposed to protect elephants, but Zimbabwe argues that its elephant population has grown beyond the country's capacity. During his visit to Zimbabwe, Sebunya said he would not comment on CITES, but he said he was happy that the country was scaling up efforts to fight poaching. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from my collection of music from the continent. And right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
see you. This baby now confirm. Say now confirm. This baby confirm. I say he confirm. Baby, my baby, my baby, bad, oh. Baby, my baby, my baby, bad, oh. I know go call me you. You chop my money, oh. I know go call me you. Free, oh, my love, so let me die, oh, with you.
Fans with the Buruzaba, yeah. Ah, Chikwebuka, in my life in Kenjika. Oh my God, I'm falling, hey, I'm falling. Every day my phone is ringing, hey, money is calling. Yeah. Where you go? Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. Oh my God, I only one chance, I need chance, I make them to dance. Oh, oh. Make me take them softly to celebrate you. Celebrate you. One in my corner, I'm one of my day. Enter head, yo. Enter head, yo. Any work I you do now for your head, yo.
Where you go?
Mastercraft to the beach, they do the enter head, yo. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance.
I celebrate, I jubilate. No time to complain, boy, you know got time to complain. Yeah, I celebrate, I jubilate. See, no time to complain, boy, you know got time to complain.
Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa, sexy ladies just they feel like you make. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
They sweet me for my head, oh. For my head, oh. If you the best, I'm on your head, oh. For your head, oh. The thing you the plan now for your head, oh. Softly, softly, kill yourself. For my people, make me let you be late, oh. Me, I they feel like I'm illegal, oh.
If you carry chicken, let me for my head, yo. My head, yo. If you drink it, rosé, now for my head, yo. My head, yo. If you, now for my head, yo.
Uh-huh.
But if you scatter this place, now for your head, yo. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance. Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Oh, sexy ladies just they feel like they. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
See, now you they make my head go, Colombo, eh. And I just they love your body,
party, eh? Come on, day for my party, eh? Kill a petty for my party, eh? Tire day for my party, eh? Holy day for my party, eh? We go go on a holiday, eh? I want to say this a lot. I want your body just to dance a lot. But you lose a lot. Oh boy, your body, they make me dance. See, now you, they make my head, they go.
Give me the go, 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 give me
From the continent, we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Xiaogang Chang, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is not the cook's fault when the cassava turns out to be hard and tasteless. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since the counter-ISIL coalition came together less than 2 years ago, the terror group's fortunes have taken a turn for the worse. At the time, the terrorists were rampaging through broad parts of both Syria and Iraq, said Secretary of State John Kerry at the recently held counter-ISIL ministerial meeting. They were overrunning and plundering key cities, murdering or enslaving thousands of people, and they were destroying ancient cultural sites and declaring themselves the leaders of all of Islam. That tide has turned. Since then, ISIL, also known as Daesh, has been driven out of nearly 50% of the territory that it once controlled in Iraq and 20% of the territory in Syria. Its leadership has been degraded, its ability to attack militarily disrupted. Over the past year, they have recruited fewer foreign fighters, defections have increased, and the number of their fighters has diminished by at least one-third. The coalition is now firmly committed to helping the government and the people of Iraq as they prepare to finish the hard job of driving Daesh completely out of their territory, so that they then can go forward and rebuild their cities and rebuild their lives and build Iraq into the inclusive and cohesive society that the people of Iraq want to see, said Secretary of State Kerry. Daesh remains dangerous, and they continue to inspire followers to perpetrate horrific violence and fan terror against innocent civilians in various places across the world. Nothing that they do is going to lead us to abandon our principles, our beliefs, because they don't offer any alternative, said Secretary of State Kerry. When the story of our era is written, the world is going to look back and say that Daesh made zero difference beyond the cruel suffering that it caused, and that every single person who committed murder or suicide at its direction did so shamefully and in vain.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.